And good morning. Welcome to another broadcast of Health Essentials. I just think this is too cool that we don't have any commercials. So you have my undivided attention, and thank you for taking time from your schedule to join me this morning. I was thinking to myself that out of all the things that I do, one of the things that I focus on throughout the day is I'm trying to determine if there's any obstacle to healing. And of course, that can take the shape or the form of many things. For example, what if a person has a continual low-grade infection that never goes away? And that could be everything from fungal to viral to bacterial to parasitic. Those aren't fun things to talk about, especially when you talk about, you know, parasites. But it's reality. So if a person has a chronic problem and they just can't seem to get well, then they probably wonder, you know what, is there something that's keeping me from getting well? So one of the things that I find myself doing is looking for any obstacle to healing. And one of those obstacles could be like a hidden food allergy. And so here's the idea. If you eat a food that your body just does not like, or your immune system decides is toxic or poisonous, then I can promise you your body will be working against yourself every time you eat it. And so, for example, I'll find one individual may have a chronic health problem, and their problem doesn't resolve until they avoid dairy products. Well, I almost find this comical, but once I find where the weak area of the body is, then I start going through the process of determining, well, is it because it's something that you're eating that's really, you know, like kryptonite to Superman? Superman can't jump over a building if kryptonite is near him, or he can't fly. And one of the things that almost causes people to universally jump up and down with joy is when they find out that chocolate is not their problem. I don't know if they get excited about anything else, but examining tens of thousands of people, once I get to the chocolate area and I say, nope, chocolate's not your problem, then they start to jump up and down. It's just kind of comical. You don't know what I'm looking at here, but I'm looking at a picture of a tree. And if I were guessing, this is called a coca or cocoa tree. It's got very large green leaves. They're almost the size of a hickory tree. The bark is kind of splotchy with gray patches on it and green, almost like the bark has peels in certain areas. But these seed pods, where the chocolate comes from, these are huge. I mean, some of them in this picture I'm looking at are a brilliant orange color. Some are more like a yellow orange, almost like what a mango would look like in the grocery store. And some of them are very, very purple. Again, kind of like a mango would look like. But I'm going to read a quote here from Chris Killam. He's an herbalist. And he writes, "If coca were a pharmaceutical drug, it would be hailed as the greatest medicine of all time. And its discoverer would reap the Nobel Prize in Medicine." Oh, my goodness. Well, let me read just a little bit to you. You know what the botanical name of cacao is? Or if you, it's C-A-C-A-O, or cacao. I'll call it cacao. The botanical name is Theobroma cacao. That means food of the gods. And I want to read this to you. "When you stand in front of the chocolate display at the grocery store, you may not realize it, but you are looking at one of the most popular herbs of all time. Long cherished by the peoples of Central and South America, cacao trees now grow in tropical locations around the world in order to fuel a global obsession with chocolate. You probably thought it was just people here in America that love chocolate." They say that cacao trees probably first grew... Oh, I'm sorry, it's pronounced cacao. Cacao trees probably first grew in Venezuela and were spread over time by humans' cultivation throughout the Amazon rainforest, which the soil is so rich there, I'm guessing anything could grow in the Amazon. So humans, of course, they eat whatever's in their natural environment and they consume it, but it was... these cacao beans are used as food, and they were used as beverages to drink. And obviously, what I'm alluding to, they're used as medicine. And maybe you could hold it in your mind and heart just for a brief moment that cacao might be used as a medicine. In 1519, the Aztec ruler Montezuma offered a chocolate drink. Of course, he also added vanilla and cayenne pepper added to it, and he gave this to the Spanish conquistador Cortez. Of course, this drink became the drink of the elite after Cortez brought the chocolate and vanilla back to Spain in 1528. In a letter to Charles V of Spain, Cortez calls cacao the divine drink, which builds up resistance and fights fatigue. If you will, just hold that phrase from literally, if this was 1519, let's just say that was maybe 500 years ago. We'll round it off. There are compounds that are found in cacao or chocolate. They're called polyphenols, which you could say these are actually nutrients. And you may not think that way, but when you eat chocolate, I mean, let's just face it, you've got to eat something. And I know it's horrible for me to recommend that you eat chocolate, but there are compounds in there that may be very, very beneficial. And I want to read this to you right here. I don't know if you've ever heard the story before, but have you ever heard the story of how we figured out that cacao was actually beneficial to the human being? Well, in the late 1990s, researchers began to wonder why an island off the coast of Panama, they had so little heart disease, while those that lived in Panama itself, they were completely covered up with heart disease. I mean, off the charts. I know that you know that when you read studies on health and healing that and causes of death, heart disease is number one. So you've got this small island off the coast of Panama that has practically no heart disease, but if you go inland to Panama itself, they are riddled with heart disease. So they went to the island, they discovered that the Kuna people, that's K-U-N-A in case you want to look it up, who lived there, they were drinking many cups daily of a beverage made of the cacao plant. That's where we get our chocolate from. I think that we should take note. If somebody is doing something to improve their health or to ward off disease or to stay in good working order, we might want to study that, right? Well, these people on this island, the Kuna people, they were drinking many cups a day of this chocolate beverage that was made of the cacao plant. What they did was they brought some samples home to study, and they discovered in the laboratory that cacao was extremely high in flavonoids and antioxidants that protect against heart disease. Let me see right here. Oh, yeah, here it is. A researcher by the name of Bharat Agarwal, he elaborates, study after study shows that cacao flavonoids can disarm cell-damaging free radicals, thus preserving cell membranes and protecting your DNA, preventing the formation of arterial-clogging plaque and improve blood flow to the heart, lowering high blood pressure, and prevent blood clots that can cause a heart attack or a stroke. I don't know about you, but that sounds like a pretty good deal. And plus, it's not even like you're taking medicine. Let me see right here. Other studies have specifically shown that dark chocolate, and I think the punchline here is, when you consume chocolate, you're trying to find something that's about 70% cacao, right? Okay, that's your goal. I don't think a Hershey's Kiss or a chocolate Snickers or Milky Way qualifies as chocolate for healing. There'd be like a boatload of sugar in there. Those are actually more sugar and junk than they are chocolate. So what are you looking for here? You're looking for chocolate nibs or chocolate chips or chocolate or powder that's 70% cacao. That's spelled C-A-C-A-O, cacao. Okay, so, well, that's right. It increases HDL. How many times have you been to the doctor and they do a lipid profile and they measure your total cholesterol? But normally, don't they call that lipoprotein the good form of cholesterol? It's not really cholesterol, it's a lipoprotein, but it's called HDL. That stands for high density lipoprotein. So when your HDL cholesterol starts hitting about 60 or a little bit above that, that's when it seems to be this tremendous independent benefit to the health of your cardiovascular system and your heart. And so if somebody has HDL cholesterol around the number 30, that's not really an ideal situation to be in. But when your HDL cholesterol is 60 or above, this is when it kind of acts like a little garbage truck that drives around your bloodstream. And it starts scooping up and picking up cholesterol that's deposited in the lining of the arteries. It's starting to harden and oxidize. You don't want that. You don't want your arteries becoming stiff and hard. So dark chocolate that's 70% cacao is very, very protective. It increases HDL. You might want to pay attention to that, because the next time you go to the doctor, you could always say, "Doctor, what do I do to increase my HDL? Don't I want to get to the number 60 or above? Because when it's 60, I hear that plaque is removed at a faster rate from the arteries than it building up." Well, you tell me, what do you want? Do you want plaque to build up at a faster rate, or do you want your body to be able to keep your system in good working order? And the truth of the matter is, you've got to do everything that you can to take good care of yourself. And you've got to be your own advocate. And you've got to take charge of your health. Unless you do that, you're kind of at the mercy of whatever happens or what recommendations a person gives you, whether it's true or not. Quite often it's not true. But they show that even when you take the 70% cacao, it even increases insulin sensitivity. I promise you, that's what you want. Anything that improves the sensitivity of your hormone insulin as it attaches to the cell membranes, that reduces your risk of diabetes. I can't imagine one person listening this morning that would cherish the idea of having painful, burning, tingling, numb lower legs, feet. That's horrible. It's called neuropathy. There's another study. It shows when cacao is given to human beings, this has a very unique ability to reduce levels of inflammation that are related to heart disease and other chronic health problems. And so you're telling me that eating chocolate can be good for you? Yeah, I think I'd like to sign up for that study. Now, where's the other one right here? Oh, yeah, here it is right here. Cacao has even been shown to help people with chronic fatigue syndrome, which, if there is one way to discourage a woman or a man, if they are just chronically depleted, exhausted of energy, there's not many things that gets a person down. But there was a study where they did a double-blind clinical research study. They asked 10 people, and I realize these studies probably aren't impressive because it didn't involve 10,000 people. There were just 10 people that in order to be in the study, you had to have severe chronic fatigue. And what they did was they rated the severity of their symptoms. And so for 8 weeks, half the people were given high polyphenol chocolate, and the other half were given low polyphenol chocolate. That's probably called a Hershey's Kiss. That'd be low chocolate. After 8 weeks, those taking the high polyphenol chocolate, that's going to be 70% and above cacao, they report significant improvement in their symptoms, and they also noticed a decrease in anxiety. So I'm not trying to make it a wonder drug, but if you're consuming 60 to 80 to 85% cacao, awesome. Of course, in this one article, it says the healthiest way to include cacao in your diet is to skip products with sugar entirely and use 100% cacao. And those can be cacao nibs, the powder, the 100% cacao bars, they're readily available. It says avoid the Dutch process cacao since it has a lower antioxidant content. I don't know if you know this, but a lot of times when chocolate is prepared by chocolatiers, they use these huge copper kettles. And so the two things that are always promoted with aging of human being causing people to become more frail is if they have a buildup of iron, that's usually men, or a buildup of copper, that's usually women. But when they cook chocolate in these large copper kettles, I can't help but think that some of that copper is going to chelate or bond with the chocolate, so when you eat a lot of it. So if you don't use that process, I think you're good to go. You know what I find interesting? They're showing now that men that donate blood, this reduces their iron load. Because when you have this excessive buildup of iron, you have all these heart problems. That's why men that donate blood, or they give a pint to the blood bank, they're actually promoting longevity and healing and protection against aging. Whereas women, they have this natural God-given protective mechanism. They have a menstrual flow every month, or every 28 days ideally. And so for them, they may be more a little bit prone to build up of copper. Well, you don't want to have copper or iron build up and cause plaque to form in your arteries, or plaque to build up in the brain. And so what reduces copper buildup in women? Well, that's where we start entering with the use of things like eating blueberries. Actually, have y'all ever heard the phrase that an apple a day keeps a doctor away? Yeah, the skins of an apple have been shown to be very, very good copper chelators. I don't have the article in front of me, but it just kind of popped in my mind. You've heard me talk in the past about a substance. It's a B vitamin-like compound, and they get it from rice bran. So when rice is grown, this is just a byproduct of kind of polishing the rice and getting the bran off so they can sell the rice for people to cook and eat. You know, just normal store rice. But in that bran, there's this naturally occurring, by God's great design, of this B vitamin-like compound called inositol hexaphosphate. And for short, it's called IP6. IP6 is showing to be one of the greatest natural chelators. When I say chelators, I'm talking about something that will attach to toxic molecules, whether that be a buildup of iron or copper, and it helps rid the body of this toxic accumulation. So it's no mystery where people live a long time. Usually they have a diet that provides them with IP6. Well, when you eat apples, you're helping to rid your body and chelate and remove excess copper buildup. So if you went to an optometrist or an ophthalmologist and they took a picture in your back in the retina of your eye or the macula, they might see what's called copper wiring. And that would be one indication that you've got sufficient amounts of plaque that are building up. I just took a look at the clock. Oh my goodness. Been talking for 18 minutes. If you would like to join me and ask a question on the radio, feel free to do so. I'll take your call right away. The number here at the station is 903-586-5257. Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I just have a question about some recent blood work that I had. And the results came back with, the HDL was 61, which you just said that was good.
Oh, that's awesome.
Okay, now the non-HDL was 163, and that's supposed to be kind of high, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
So what should I do to correct that?
Well, it's relative. What's your triglyceride number?
Okay, let me see.
They'll usually have total cholesterol, then they'll have triglycerides, HDL, LDL, VLDL.
Okay, the triglycerides, 69.
That's a great number. Excellent.
Now, the total cholesterol was 224.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of high, is that right?
This is kind of a hard conversation, but I really want to have it.
Okay.
And let me say it this way. If I told you that half of the dry weight of your brain is pure cholesterol, would you believe me?
Yes.
Would you also believe me if I told you the highest cholesterol-containing food on the planet is mother's breast milk?
Yes.
And so, years ago, I think the year was 2008, they measured the number of cases of total global amnesia. I don't know if you know what that means, but that means there's a wife, and she's taking a drug, and she completely forgets who she is and who her husband is and where she lives, and she doesn't recognize her kids anymore. She just has amnesia.
Mm-hmm.
Guess which drug is most famous for causing amnesia? It's a cholesterol-lowering drug called a statin.
Mm-hmm.
And so about 4 years ago, the latest studies came out, and they said, what is the number one drug that causes adult-onset type 2 diabetes? And lo and behold, it was a statin drug, a drug that's designed to lower cholesterol. And I thought, okay, here we have a drug that reduces cholesterol, but the net result in a, and I realize this is kind of an extreme example, is you could have amnesia. Probably there's some husbands that have that right now. I'm just joking. So anyway, all I'm trying to say is cholesterol may end up being a very, very good molecule. It's a repair molecule. And so when cholesterol levels go up to 224, I do not want to give you the message or the idea that that's bad. Because what could happen is this could mean your body's actually trying to repair something. And so they've shown that every time that a human being has an infection, whether it's a flu or a cold or pneumonia, you know, appendicitis, upper respiratory tract infection, sinus infection, cholesterol always increases with an infection. There's no way around it.
Mm-hmm.
And so your cholesterol could have been easily 199 points and been perfectly fine according to a medical doctor, and you could have had a touch of a cold and it would have shot up to 250. No reason to freak out. Cholesterol is there to help counter inflammation. So maybe what I want to say is that form of cholesterol called the non-HDL cholesterol, sometimes it's called LDL or low-density lipoprotein. What I really want to kind of give you the message on is LDL cholesterol may be the very best sponge that God ever created.
Mm-hmm.
And when I say sponge, it, one of its roles is to soak up toxins that under normal circumstances would harm you if it weren't there. Sometimes I'll tell people that call me on the phone, they say, Dr. Morgan, I think I've got food poisoning. I'm as sick as a dog. What do I do? And I say, go get some activated charcoal, pour the capsules in water, drink it, stir it, and drink it on an empty stomach. And they'll call me back and say, oh my goodness, that stuff work like a champ. But charcoal soaks up poisons. If a child accidentally swallowed some of Mama's pain pills and Mama found out about it, she'd take them to the ER, and guess what they'd give the child? Charcoal.
Okay.
But LDL cholesterol is like a sponge and a magnet for toxins. And so when children of parents that work on these large industrial farms where they spray a lot of pesticides, out of all the kids in America, they have the highest non-HDL or the LDL cholesterol. As soon as they move away from these farms, that number goes down. So when you're exposed to lots of Roundup and herbicides and insecticides, guess what happens? Cholesterol goes up in those studies. And I think it's because it's trying to protect you. Now, the other way that I can do this is, to the best of my knowledge, the only time that cholesterol can ever create a problem or cause a problem is if it turns into the oxidized form. And so let me give you an example. Have you ever heard of oxidized cholesterol?
No.
Well, I can tell you how to make it. The way that they make powdered milk is they heat up this metallic gun that's attached to a rubber hose. And they run milk through this rubber hose to this heated gun, and the gun is heated to like 700 degrees Fahrenheit. That's not exactly the number, but it's pretty close. And so the gun, the metal device is so hot that milk goes from the liquid state to the dry powdered state instantly. They just burn all the water out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
It does.
But the problem is, with that much heat, it turns cholesterol into an oxidized form. You know what? You know what the hood of your car would look like if the paint was starting to oxidize? It would look like, if I scraped the paint off, the sheet metal would oxidize. That's called rust. And so they know that oxidized cholesterol is the one form that has this tremendous affinity for building up in the lining of your arteries. And so I'm not telling you understand why that happens. I just know it does. And so if every doctor would order one simple test, we could get through this and end all the confusion. It's just asking for a measurement of oxidized cholesterol. And so if we took your cholesterol profile, but we just added one test to it, the test would be measuring your blood for the a percentage of oxidized cholesterol. And if it were high, I'd say, ma'am, we got a problem here. We got to remedy this. Which I know I didn't say this, but guess what I'm going to tell you not to eat ever? Don't eat powdered eggs and don't eat powdered milk, because that's all oxidized cholesterol.
Okay.
So if a person's eating powdered milk or consuming it, you're just asking for oxidized cholesterol to end up in the lining of the arteries.
Okay.
Did they by chance measure a form of cholesterol called VLDL that stands for very low density lipoprotein?
Because, I don't see that one on here.
Well, if they did, the number that I always look for is 21. If it's 21 or above, then I start thinking, well, maybe the circumstances are that plaque and cholesterol is building up at a faster rate than your body's able to remove it. But your HD numbers are very good. Now, I'll say this also. Cholesterol levels always increase when you have stress.
Okay.
Is there any chance you've had a little bit of stress? Or not too bad?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think so.
Well, are you worried about these numbers at all?
Well, I was concerned about this. Now, can I ask one more? This is really what I meant to ask you.
Oh, yeah,
instead
yeah.
The cholesterol, okay. The TSH number was 6.52, and so the doctor wanted me to take levothyroxine, a medication, but I haven't started it because I really don't want to do that. I was going to see if there was something else I could do. And I drank coffee before my blood work, and I didn't know if that might cause something to be different.
Well,
I don't feel tired or anything.
No, I'm glad about that.
Okay.
Coffee is very famous for causing triglyceride levels to go up. But your triglyceride levels were at 69. Now, would you say that you're a pretty good body weight?
Kind of average, yeah.
Okay. TSH, that's just an abbreviation for thyroid stimulating hormone. And the higher that number goes, that usually reflects your pituitary, which is one of your very important glands that tells your thyroid what to do. When TSH is above 3, most likely your pituitary is saying, could we produce a little bit more thyroid hormone? Now, have you ever heard of a simple test called the Broda-O-Barnes test? Or the basal?
What?
It's called the Broda-Barnes test.
Mm-mm.
I didn't think so. A lady was talking to me about it yesterday. It's called the basal temperature, and this is just one way that you can try to measure your thyroid's activity in your own home. And the way that you would do that is every morning when you wake up, or for a few mornings anyway, keep a thermometer by the bed, and all you do is when you wake up, put the thermometer in your mouth and just measure your morning temperature.
Okay.
And so would you agree that maybe a temperature of 98.6 would be like a pretty good average?
Yes.
What if your temperature came back 96.7?
Well, I don't know.
Would you think that maybe but that would be one indication that maybe the thyroid is underperforming.
Okay.
Now, can I ask you just a couple of simple questions?
Yes.
Does anybody ever tell you that you snore at night?
No.
Do you sleep deeply all night long, or do you wake up multiple times?
I'm not a good sleeper. No, I'm 52, so I'm in menopause right now.
Does that mean you're having some hot flashes?
Yes.
Okay.
Not unbearable. You know, nothing too terrible.
I don't want to make this more complicated than what I should, but I'm probably going to, because I just kind of overtalk topics sometimes. But number one, if you check your temperature, and it's less than 98.6 degrees by a significant amount, I would say we've uncovered something. Now, that doesn't mean there's a problem, but like anything else, the closer that you get to 98.6 degrees with your morning temperature, this is the closer you're going to be toward, you know, excellent health. Mm-hmm. And that's what we want to strive for.
98.6, you said?
Well, you know.
Or 96.
Well, no, 98.6. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Didn't mean to confuse you. I kind of threw a lot of numbers at you.
Okay.
But one of the roles of the thyroid is to produce and release thyroid hormones.
Mm-hmm.
And so the most abundant thyroid hormone is one called T4. T4 goes to the liver, and in the liver you have an enzyme called the deiodinase enzyme that converts T4 into T3. To make that happen, one of the rate, probably the most common deficiency would be selenium.
Mm-hmm.
And without selenium and zinc and manganese, you cannot convert T4 into T3 real efficiently. Or maybe the way that I like to think of it is, if you were a little bit low in selenium, which is a trace element, there'll be your thyroid just won't perform as well as if you had enough of it. Does that make sense?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like if your kids call you and say, "Mom, we need $100 today. We're low on food," and you're thinking, "I've only got 80 in my bank account. I can give you 80. I don't have 100." But you can't give what you don't have, right? And so if you're lacking selenium or manganese, which you can get that from black pepper, and selenium can be found in Brazil nuts, and zinc.
Okay.
No, I'm sorry.
I think I had the manganese. Maybe. No, probably not.
Well, and the main point that I'm getting to is your thyroid, it does a tremendous job on every cell in your body at helping to regulate your metabolism. And when probably my definition of metabolism is whatever has to happen to produce energy so your cells work properly. And so what if there's a little bit of a drop-off in your metabolism? Then I start seeing problems with oxygen. And I realize it's a very complex topic, but to me, the number one reason why a person would wake up in the middle of the night is because low oxygen during the middle of the night.
Oh.
And so when you have low oxygen, what happens every single time is your heart has to work a little bit harder. And when your heart has to work harder, one of the ways that your body counters that to take the pressure off your arteries and your veins is to release what's called diuretic hormone, which means you start forming urine in the middle of the night. So I don't know of anybody that says, "Dr. Morgan, what can you do to me to make me urinate 10 times a night? Because I think that'd be just a real special evening." That never happens at all. If I had my way, you would never get up to urinate, or you'd never wake up once you fall asleep.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not trying to be difficult, but if your morning temperature is 96 degrees or 97 or 97.5 degrees, I would say we found a glitch in your system where we're trying to improve that.
Okay.
But if you're waking up multiple times, do you wake up wide awake?
Well, I mean, I wake up, I go to the bathroom one time, and then not really wide awake, no.
How long does it take to fall back to sleep?
I usually go right back to sleep, and I might wake up maybe 3 times, maybe, and maybe, I don't know.
Well, do you feel really, really refreshed and renewed when you get up in the morning?
I do. That's why I have a lot of energy. I do a lot. And
then
so that's why.
This is not bad then. I mean, this is much easier to fix. But the TSH, there's an indication that that your thyroid is a little bit sluggish, if I can say it that way.
Okay.
And so there's lots of ways you can help it. Number one, I would probably say kelp is a superfood.
Okay.
Or seaweed.
Okay.
Where do you live, by the way?
I'm in Longview.
Do you ever go to Drug Emporium or the Granary?
I do.
You know what I think tastes good? I'm probably a weirdo. I love those seaweed snacks.
Okay.
Have you seen them before?
I have not.
They're like very thin sheets of baked, pressed seaweed.
Okay.
I know. It's probably weird. You're probably thinking, well, what do I do with them? Do I roll up some smoked salmon and avocado to make a sushi roll? Well, that's one way. But and that's why for thousands of years people have consumed seaweed, because the ocean is very rich in minerals and it has a lot of these trace minerals that maybe your thyroid needs. So if you get very clean seaweed, tell me if you see an improvement. That's all you
okay.
can do.
How much should I eat a day?
Well, if you were taking kelp in the form of a supplement, just follow the manufacturer's recommended dose.
Okay.
And if you wanted to try the seaweed snacks, then I'm going to let you judge because they're like paper thin.
Mm-hmm.
You're probably going to tell me, I can't even tell I ate those. It's like I ate air. They're that thin.
Okay, good.
If you have a grandson, he might make paper airplanes out of them. They're very, very okay. thin. But it's just it's just sheets of seaweed.
Okay.
But
I'll
interesting.
Try to eat them.
And all you're doing is you're feeding your body a rich base of nutrients and elements to help your thyroid function better.
Okay.
So I'm sorry.
I was just thinking, I want to try these things and then have my blood work. I want to retest that.
Well, let me give you one warning.
Okay.
Have you ever heard of a condition called angina pectoris?
No.
Have you ever heard of somebody having so much chest pain they carried in their shirt or purse a little bottle of nitroglycerin tablets?
Oh, yeah. No, my mother does. She does have that.
Okay.
Yes,
yeah, exactly. Well, what nitroglycerin does is it radically increases what's called nitric oxide. And nitric oxide helps greatly improve blood flow. It opens up the arteries. I mean, it's great
mm-hmm.
stuff. And so if somebody had really narrowed, tiny arteries and they tried walking across, you know, a grocery store to get, you know, some food, and they go, man, my chest is hurting. I better stop and take a nitro. Well, after, 30 seconds, they go, okay, I feel better now. Because ultimately, when you have reduced oxygen and blood flow to the heart, that's going to result in chest pain. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay. The female hormone called estrogen. Estrogen has been shown over and over and over that it increases nitric oxide levels. That's got to be one of the reasons why when women are young and they're menstruating and they have plenty of estrogen, they don't really have heart problems. They don't really have heart attacks, but it's only after menopause when estrogen levels start to drop off that they have all their problems. And I know you've heard those things. So, like, if I'm not mistaken, I think women have 7 times as much heart disease as they have breast cancer. So if you just weigh those out, you're going, okay. And that's why you're calling me about the non-HDL or the LDL cholesterol being 163. Well, this is where they show that there's a compound found in nature called transresveratrol. So sometimes if a woman drinks a glass of red wine or a fermented beverage where they take the skins of red grapes or dark grapes, they have more resveratrol. And they've shown that if a woman's low in estrogen, then maybe taking a supplement of resveratrol is exactly what you want to do because it's been shown to increase nitric oxide.
Could you spell that for me?
Resveratrol? Yeah.
Yes.
Well, can I spell it first?
Yes, please.
Okay, you ready?
Yes.
R-E-S-V-E-R-A-T-R-O-L. Resveratrol.
Okay,
it's almost
thank
like
you.
There's a Z in there, like resveratrol, but it's an S. But when you take resveratrol, now, you don't know what I looked at earlier this week, but I looked at a picture on animal studies, and I realized these were not done on humans, but in the animal model, they would force the animals into heart disease. They purposely tried to clog an artery with plaque and cholesterol, and then they install what's called a stent. Do you know what a stent is?
Yes.
Kind of like a metal wire cage that kind of props the artery open. Kind of like a springy sleeve. You know what I mean, don't you?
Right,
like
right.
Like a slinky that holds your artery open. And then they tried one thing. They said, okay, what would happen to these animals if we gave them a little bit of what's called resveratrol? And I'm telling you, the pictures, the cross, and of course, the reason they don't do this on humans is because they would harvest the organs of the animal and then look at them under a microscope. You can't do that to a human being. Thank the good Lord. They probably would if they could. But when they section these arteries, the ones that had a little bit of resveratrol, I'm telling you, their arteries were so open and so just great blood flow. And the ones with the stents without resveratrol, they were already starting to close up again. Which, and I think when I've read the research on this, maybe the number's 10%. if I'm not right, you know, cut me some slack, but I think 10% of all people that have stents, it just immediately closes right back up within a minute to a few hours. Mm. Now, I can't explain that, so let's just say that within 1 to 3 hours of following a stent being put in, the artery's already closed again. Mm-hmm. So, but in this animal study, when they gave them a little bit of resveratrol, oh my goodness, talk about all, but resveratrol, like I was saying, it increases nitric oxide. There is a drug that's prescribed to men all the time called Viagra. How does Viagra work? It increases nitric oxide. So anytime that you increase nitric oxide, you increase blood flow in the arteries, right?
Right.
Now, here's what I really wanted to tell you a while ago, and that's why I brought up the idea of chest pain with narrowed arteries. Let's just say, for example, you do have some old oxidized cholesterol in your arteries. Well, how do you get rid of that? Well, there might be two or three ways to do that. I've already covered resveratrol. That's one of them. I personally don't have a problem if you drink a glass of red wine. I don't, but I'm not putting my beliefs off on you.
Right.
Now, if you drink 25 gallons a night, that might be a problem, you know, a little bit.
Okay. How much should I drink? I don't even drink. So how much should I drink a week or if I do this?
Well, you know, I don't even really know the answer to that. I could just tell you that women that drink red wine, maybe 4 to 6 ounces a day, they seem to be in a much better place as far as their cardiovascular system. And staying in good, you know, you're in this for the long game or the long play here. You're just 52. You're a kid.
Mm-hmm.
So what you want to be able to do is you want to be able to make the next 40 years count where you can bless people. And,
right.
You know, in our present world, if you're sick, you can't afford to be sick.
Mm-hmm.
I hear stories, maybe not every single day, but every week a person says, Dr. Morgan, I had just a little bit of pain. I went to the ER. My bill is $16,000.
Mm-hmm.
Or I had a little bit of a problem. I just wanted to make sure. And I was there for 10 minutes, and it cost me $3,750. I'm thinking, oh, my goodness. So, and that's why this program exists. I want you to have the highest level of health that you can have. And you're only going to do that if you understand what you're doing. But what I was getting at is when LDL cholesterol is elevated, this might be an indication that you might need zinc. Now, if you were looking at your blood work a little bit more closely, there's a type of a test called a CMP, or a complete metabolic panel, or a metabolic profile.
Mm-hmm.
There is a there's two things that I usually look at. One is a transportation molecule called albumin.
Okay. Oh, I have that on here.
What does yours say?
1.9.
No, that's globulin. Or that's the albumin-globulin ratio. Look for albumin.
It is. Oh, by itself is, looks like, okay, I want to say 4.8.
Oh, that is awesome.
Okay.
Usually long-term human studies show that when your albumin is 4.8, mm-hmm. you live a lot longer and you're a lot smarter than everybody else.
Well, I like that.
I think you should tell all your relatives. I said you're smarter than they are. But then look at the other one. There's one called alkaline phosphatase, and sometimes they abbreviate it to ALK.
Yes, it's on there. 68.
That's a pretty good number, too. Now,
okay.
Is there any chance that you would say that you crave sweets or salty foods a lot?
I do like sweets, but I have recently, you know, tried to not have as much sugar.
Well, I tried to look for a zinc deficiency, but I don't know that I can find it from your blood test. But if you told me you're just totally into salty foods and sweet foods, I'd say that's a classic sign of a zinc deficiency. But my point is, I was getting to,
mm-hmm.
when people have very severe chest pain and they have narrowed arteries that are closed off and they can't get enough oxygen to the heart,
mm-hmm.
this is an indication where we might try zinc therapy, because what zinc does, you put zinc into the human being. And then in turn, what it does is it pushes old, hardened, oxidized cholesterol out of your heart and
mm-hmm.
out of your arteries. But I'm telling you, that's what you want to do. You want your arteries to be supple and pliable and flexible.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want them to be stiff and hard as a rock, do you?
No, no. And so how much zinc should I take?
Well,
I try that.
I would probably say between 30 and maybe 50 milligrams, but you got to promise me you'll only take it with food.
Okay.
And so that's one of the things you're looking at. But that compound that I mentioned earlier called IP6, I am convinced that's one of the greatest nutritional discoveries of all time. And all they're doing is they're discovering, why do these people live a long time? You know, even what I read earlier, the Kuna people that live off the on an island off the coast of Panama, mm-hmm. they don't have any heart disease at all. But they're also consuming about 3 to 4 cups a day of this cacao, which is like a chocolate beverage.
Right.
I bet you are very upset with me recommending dark chocolate today, aren't you?
It sounds good to me.
Oh, you're not arguing. Okay. But at least consider these things. But you just have to, I mean, every human being that's listening right now, they have to avoid powdered milk. So if that's a creamer in their coffee where they're using powdered milk solids, that's going to be oxidized cholesterol.
Okay, I'm going to stop that.
Or evaporated milk, stuff like that. I mean, if you did it once a year, I don't know that I would get bent out of shape on that. That's one of the reasons why some of these whey protein powders, I don't like them at all, because that's the way they make them. They add high heat to the milk, and that's how they get the powder out. Or that's how they convert it from liquid to a powdered state.
Okay.
But the problem is that a high heat causes the cholesterol to oxidize or to rust. Okay. Just like if I told you, let's just say that you were very, very anemic right now, and I said, what do you think about maybe just a spoonful of unsulfured blackstrap molasses? You'd say, I think that's a great idea, because isn't that like iron anyway from a plant source? I'd say, yeah. Mm-hmm. But would you like me to take a file and file down some rusted metal or a nail and say, mm-hmm. open your mouth, I got a spoonful of rusted iron I'm going to give you to correct your anemia? You wouldn't do it.
No.
But that's what happens when women take ferrous sulfate in the form of a supplement. I mean, human beings, we're 70% water. What happens when you take water and react it with iron? It rusts.
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I think there's room for improvement here.
Well, thank you so much for answering all my questions.
You're welcome. I hope you have a very good day. I know I was long-winded, but I think I covered a lot of topics that will probably help a lot of people.
Good. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Have a great day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, there's time for another call, 903-586-5257, if you'd like to call and join me on the program. You know, really, I wouldn't do anything more than I would do with anybody else, but you've got to wrap your mind around, what can I do to put myself in a good situation where my body can be the very best that it can be? Because, you know, we're humans. We are going to age and have problems. But I'd rather you be in good working order for as long as possible. Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Yes, sir. Good morning.
Good morning.
I need to know what causes your platelets to be high.
I couldn't hear that. What causes what to be high?
Your platelets.
Platelets. You said plavix. That's a blood thing.
Yeah. No,
well, I know the answer to that. What causes plavix to be high is taking too much of it. No, I'm joking. platelets, and I'm going to try to be as serious as I can about this, but I don't want to be negative.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just say that you went to the doctor recently and your platelet level is like 400.
Mine's 650.
There's a problem.
Okay.
And so I'm not going to say that. That's going to come across as so negative. Can I just tell you that there's something that's causing horrific inflammation in your body?
Mm-hmm.
What is it? Do you have a gut instinct what your problem is?
Uh-uh. Well, when I went in, I had thyroid. I had breast cancer 7 years ago.
You beat me to the punch. I just did not want to say that because I don't want to be negative. But when platelets are high, it usually indicates there's some underlying process that's a little bit out of control in the body. And so,
well, I had breast cancer, and then in September I had thyroid cancer, and they removed it. But the doctor came out that did the pre-op and said that they've been watching it, and it just keeps climbing up, and it's 650 now. But I talked to my cancer doctor, and she said, well, we're just going to watch it. Well, what are we watching if it's high?
Well, I agree with you. I hate that. I hate it. I hate it. I don't even like that plan. That plan sucks. I know
that's
not good English.
I thought, well, why doesn't somebody do something if it's high? Because I don't know what it means.
That's a great question. Why don't they do something about it? But that's the whole. That's the whole idea.
I don't know what it means.
I know what it means. I just don't want to tell you on the air.
No.
You want to call me on my cell phone and I'll tell you afterwards.
Okay.
I just want you to know that I love you and I care mm-hmm. about you. And mm-hmm. I don't want to hurt your feelings. So mm-hmm. my cell phone number is 903-445-0558.
Zero what?
0558. And you're the only one that I want to call. If I have 50 other people call me today, I cannot handle 50 phone calls today. So you're the only one that I'm giving permission to call me. But I'll tell you what that means. But it means most likely you've got cancer that's out of control. And I'm sorry. I don't want to be the jerk to tell you that. But the question is, what do we do about that?
Exactly.
And so when platelets are elevated, you're thinking, okay, there's a process that's at play right now, and it's not the great process. And so I've got some things I'm going to try to talk you into real quick. Now, I'm going to give you a little bit of history. Now, what I'm going to say is going to come across a little bit strange and bizarre, but it's 100% accurate, and they think it's behind all this. Mm-hmm. Do you know what the word senile means? Is it related to a person's mental, you know, cognitive abilities?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. There's a type of cell that they have discovered in the human body. They're called senescent cells.
Mm-hmm.
Once a human being hits about 18 years of age, every year they start accumulating more senescent cells. And these cells quite often are called zombie cells. Normal, healthy cells, what they do is they make good things for you. They serve a good purpose. They do a great work. They keep your body in great working order. Another thing they do is they divide and they replicate and they give us brand new cells. And so when a normal cell is at the end of its lifespan, can I just use a liver cell as my example? It's supposed to live exactly 42 days. Or a red blood cell, maybe it has a lifespan of 120 days, ideally. But at the end of the 120 days, guess what's supposed to happen? Once that red blood cell has done everything it's supposed to do, it is supposed to die. That's called apoptosis. These senescent cells, they completely refuse to die. And so what they do is they just take up space and they hang around and they will not go away. And so the problem is they eat food, but they give off a whole bunch of waste. So they don't serve any good purpose. And every year that we're alive, we just get, you know, the estimate currently is every day we build up about 23,000 more senescent cells every day. That's why they call them zombie cells, because they just take up space, they eat food, but they give off all this waste that drives inflammation. So platelets are going to be one of the best tests of all time to tell me if there's inflammation that's spiraling out of control. I'm just like you are. I am appalled, and I hate their comments. I know that may not be very Christian.
I went to three different doctors, my main doctor, my cancer doctor, and then my thyroid doctor. And they are all saying, well, we're just going to watch it and see what happens. Well, what does that mean?
It means that you've got a diabolical process going on, and the sooner that we tackle this, the better you're going to be. And okay. So here's one way of killing off senescent cells. Okay. It's called a feeding window of 6 hours. I didn't say this is going to be popular, but you are a very determined woman to help yourself, so that's what I'm going to focus on. I respect you very, very much, and I'm going to be your biggest fan. Okay. I'm going to do whatever I can to hold your hand through this process and make sure you get from point A to point Z successfully. Okay. But if you would institute today a feeding window of 6 hours, what does that look like? You eat lunch at 12 o'clock, you eat your supper at 5 or 6, and that's it.
Okay.
That means you're fasting literally 18 hours a day. But fasting has been shown to be the most accurate technology for destroying those senescent zombie cells. You're killing them. You're starving them to death. Good.
Okay.
Getting in a sauna has been shown to kill those cells. It is not by happenstance that the study that came from Finland 2 years ago showed that men that got into a sauna the most, they had absolutely the lowest amount of Alzheimer's and dementia. It was non-existent. People that use a sauna the least, well, guess what they had? They had the most dementia, senility, and Alzheimer's. So when you apply heat to the body, guess what it does? It kills those zombie cells. There's not one disease process, well, except for a trauma. That's different.
Mm-hmm.
whether you say cataracts or Alzheimer's or heart disease or diabetes, all these are is a buildup of senescent cells. And we're trying to turn the tide. That's why the lady that I talked to on the phone earlier, I told her about taking a supplement that comes from grapes called resveratrol. It took me 25 years to learn how to pronounce that word, which is par for me. And so when you take resveratrol, you're helping. This is the closest thing that mimics a calorie-restricted diet or intermittent fasting. I think his name is Jason Fung. He's got a book about fasting. It's excellent. If you start feeding in a window of 6 hours, so whatever you're going to eat, like a green salad with salmon on top of it and, you know, hummus and pesto and all that good stuff, avocados, you're going to be killing all these senescent cells. For men, donating blood is one of the greatest ways of doing this. But you got to starve them out. And one of the ways to help kill them is going to a sauna frequently. And, you know, sometimes you just need information. I would rather you take steps nudging you in a good direction than say, I think our plan is just to watch. Well, that doesn't affect you, Mr. Doctor.
No joke.
But you know what? It would affect them if this was them. You know what they would say? This is what every doctor tells me. Please help me. Nobody will help me. Nobody will listen to me. I'm going, you know what? I want to help you. Because if it was them, they would be frantic, thinking, I don't like the sound of watching and waiting at all. I want some action. Give me a plan that's going to move me from where I am to where I need to be. And so cut out all the sugar, cut out all the grains, just focus on meat and vegetables. The low-starch vegetables are going to be the best. Cabbage, asparagus, broccoli, kale, cauliflower, greens, zucchini, squash.
Okay.
Eat all that stuff. Put butter on everything.
Okay.
You got to get some nutrients. I read the article this morning about how when you put black pepper on your food, you can extract more nutrients than if you didn't. Well, I'm going, well, no wonder I like black pepper. Not everybody does. But if you start doing these things, exercising has been shown to greatly help kill these senescent cells. So if I could recommend 100% cacao or chocolate, and if you had resveratrol, if you tried intermittent fasting with a feeding window of 6 hours a day, I'm telling you, you could start to see the tide would turn in your favor on this. And there's a host of other stuff. Probably what I would do, I would take a mushroom extract called turkey tail.
Turkey tail?
Mm-hmm. Just because it helps greatly upregulate the ability of your immune system to correct things and to get rid of things that don't belong. But the idea of a sauna, yes, I realize this is not real popular, but what I want to do is I want to turn your oven in your house to like about 140 and then tell you to look inside, and when you look inside, I'll shove you in just like they did the witch on Hansel and Gretel. I'm only joking about that. I'm just teasing. So if you would just consider those things.
Okay.
But I think you're going to look up the word autophagy. A, it's auto, like A-U-T-O.
Wait a minute.
A-U-T-O.
T-O.
That's auto. And then phagy is P-H-A-G-Y, I think. It's called autophagy. That's what you do when you practice intermittent fasting. But I'm telling you, I'm rooting for you. But those platelets are high. You've got to see that turn around. If those start to lower, that is a confirmation that what you're doing is turning the tide and you're getting into a much better place. So At least we can do that together.
Yes, sir.
So,
thank you.
You're welcome. I'm rooting for you. I hope you have a good day, ma'am.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
All right. You're listening to KBJS FM 90.3 Jacksonville, Tyler Longview.